bit of modern buster there. You're listening to Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We are your interactive entertainment Sunday breakfast show, Squabble Box. We're going to be with you until 10 a.m. this morning. I'm forgetting what day it is. My name's Kai Valentine, and that laugh you just heard there was the lovely Miss Maisie Anderson.
Oh, good morning.
How are you doing, Maisie?
I'm doing pretty good. I can't believe that was busted.
Yes.
We were having this conversation while this was on.
I've been
hearing it everywhere. Didn't realise it was busted.
I've loved that song since it came out. It's been one of those catchy songs, which I felt kind of in my old man ways of going, well, you know what? Oh, I don't like modern music.
Oh, yes,
against the chart music. There's part of me that goes, I cannot like that song. I need to feel guilty for liking that song. But now I've found out it's busted. Fair play. Nostalgia kicks
it's
in.
It's a bit like, I really like the song Love Yourself by Justin Bieber. I don't like the fact I like it, but I do. And then I found out it was written by Ed Sheeran and now I'm fine.
Yeah.
Don't have to feel guilty about that at all. The reason I like that particular song is because it's in the same style as one of my favourite artists, because he's the one that wrote it.
That is very, very true. So we are going to be talking all about cult classics today, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that as the show goes on. But Maisie, I think it's time. It's time. It's time to go into our first segment of the show, and that is...
No, that's a different catchphrase, sorry.
We need a jingle.
We need a jingle.
We need jingles.
We've been saying this for over a year, and we've never got ourselves a jingle.
I think you'll find we did have a jingle.
It was awful.
We had a jingle for the Can't Google It quiz.
It was Don't Google It, and we haven't done that in almost 6 months.
So let's go into our first segment,
yes,
which we kick off every show with, and that is Can You Believe That? It's where we ask, can you believe that a new story has happened this week? And we ask, can you believe that, according to the BBC, a Blue Peter time capsule has been accidentally dug up by construction workers 33 years earlier than planned? Did you see this story?
I've been told about this story by a couple of people, and it's so bizarre, because this is the thing. Blue Peter haven't had a good run with these time capsules. The first time that they opened them up was when they were putting the Millennium One in. So they opened up the ones from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, but the majority of the time capsules got soaked because they weren't properly insulated. So the first time they ever opened up all of these capsules, they were completely gone. Like, a lot of the stuff in there was ruined, apart from the sort of newer ones that they only put in a couple years later, earlier. Well, so they've had a bad run of luck there, and then they had this again.
Yeah, for people who do not know, this is according to BBC News. The Millennium Time Capsule was buried under the Millennium Dome, which is now the O2 Arena, in 1998. It was filled by viewers' mementos of the time, and it was all voted on by the viewers themselves. And it wasn't supposed to be unearthed until 2050. The O2 has said, despite being damaged, the capsule's contents are safe. And the BBC said that the capsule will be reburied. So, 1998, what was in it? Well, the first thing that stuck out to me, the first thing that they came across, was a Tamagotchi.
Aww.
Loved me a Tamagotchi.
We had a conversation on the breakfast show about Tamagotchis.
We did.
Only a couple of days ago. That was interesting.
I did love Tamagotchis. I mean, they needed feeding. A lot.
Yeah, I had the problem of my school wouldn't allow them, so I would leave at 8, well, I'd leave at like 7 o'clock in the morning to go to school, come back at about 3 or just after, and he'd be gone.
In fact, it was on this show last week when we were talking about the 90s.
We were talking about the 90s.
Yeah, which we were talking about that. All the breakfast shows seem to roll into one nowadays.
They do, which is why you thought we were leaving at 9. We're not, we're leaving at 10.
The other things that were in there were, of course, a Blue Peter badge. And a Teletubby doll, which is quite interesting as well.
I had some of the Teletubby dolls.
Yeah, there was also a set of British coins. However, this was pre the £2 coin.
Was it?
Interesting, yeah.
Nice.
And when they reopen this in 2050...
It'll be completely different currency.
Because
they're starting to phase out ours to build up new ones.
Yeah, the new pound coin comes out in March. So it's very, very soon.
We've already have the new £5 note.
Yes.
And all of that. Not to mention who knows who what monarchy will be on there in that many years.
There was also an insulin pen, a photo of the Oblivion ride at Alton Towers, and an asthma inhaler as well.
Aww.
And a picture of Princess Diana. Now, a lot of these things, we sit there, and especially people who were born in the 90s, will sit there and go, yeah, but this doesn't, you know, this doesn't feel like it's been a long time since...
Yeah, there's a thing that's going around at the minute where, because it's 2017, a lot of people have been doing what's 10 years old.
Oh, yes.
Which includes an awful lot of music that we remember as being, what we can remember it coming out.
We being 20, between 18 and 22-year-olds.
Yes,
probably,
our sort of generation of born in the 90s before the millennia. So it all feels really strange. Because, like, I remember things that happened before the millennia... That seems that even though I was like five when the millennia ticked over, I can remember them as if they were normal. And that might be a little bit of false memory because I can remember being told things and I have a very vivid memory of them, but it's not necessarily my memory and all of that psychological stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting in, say, by 2050, so in 33 years' time, when they do open it up and they see an asthma inhaler, for example, people might go, wow, that's, you know, we forgot we used those, or even...
Look at the new design we have for them. Yeah,
and like a Spice Girls CD is in there.
And they've already done a reunion.
But even a CD... In 2050.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Like now we're going away from the CDs already. Imagine in another 33 years, CDs will be pretty much non-existent. In fact, they might even be making a comeback, like the vinyl.
They might get vintage. Well, this is a joke I had with my dad ages ago. It was sort of like, oh, all of these sort of hipsters, they love their vinyls. One day you'll get people saying that it sounds better on CD than digital download. And my dad was like, yeah, it does. It's analog. Analog's always better. It's like digital, there's always going to be a clarity issue. And I'm like, I was trying to make a joke. Don't make my joke like factually incorrect. Ruins it.
I love it when your dad gets involved in
my dad,
your arguments.
My dad, this is the thing though. My dad does the same thing I do where it's not very clear when I'm being sarcastic. And it's the same with my dad sometimes. He has a very distinct sense of humour that doesn't always come across. It took me 20 years to figure it out, and even now I'm still a bit like, I can't tell if you're actually mad or you're doing the fake mad thing. But he's done it to other people, and they've not realised. They thought he's just really passive-aggressive.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm not even going to try and understand my dad's sense of humour. but we are your Sunday breakfast show, Squabble Box. We've got a huge show coming up. We're going to be with you until 10 a.m. this morning, where we'll be followed by the wonderful Tracy Edgers. And we're going to be talking all about cult classics, from Mario to Pac-Man, Pulp Fiction to Doctor Who, whether it's a video game, a movie, a TV show, even a board game, what cult classic stick out in your memories. Get in touch in the many different ways on Twitter at SirenFM, on the email studio@sirenonline.co.uk, on the Facebook fan page Squabblebox.
Or you can always text in on 077 97 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via our Radio Player app.
And we are going to go into our next song of the morning now. Stay tuned to Siren FM.
I met you in the dark. You lit me up. You made me feel as though I was enough. We danced the night away. We drank too much. I held your hair back when you were throwing up. Then you smiled over your shoulder. For a minute I was stone cold sober. I pulled you closer to my chest, and you asked me to stay over. I won't let go. Oh, just say you
Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We are your Sunday breakfast team. We're going to be with you until 10 a.m. this morning, and we're talking all about cult classics. You're joined by myself, Kai Valentine, and Miss Maisie Anderson. So, Maisie, we're talking about cult classics. Why was it that you suggested this for today's show?
The main reason I suggested this for today's show is because there are only so many times we can talk about a different decade every week. We'll run out eventually.
That is true.
But the main reason I wanted to talk about cult classics is because it's a really weird phenomenon that I found. There's nothing in particular that sort of triggered the idea in my head, but it's an interesting concept of cult classics because the idea of it, something being cult, takes its name from the fact that it has a cult audience, meaning a really sort of strong following. That doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a good product.
Yes.
In the sense of it can be, sometimes really horrible films have cult followings, like Sharknado, but like Piranha 3D. Films like that get sort of these followings because they're so bad they're good.
Yeah.
In that sense. And then you also have the really classic kind of things like the Doctor Who, the Pulp Fiction that you mentioned, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And it's become, and it's the fact that it has, I mean, obviously the word cult is used because it's almost cult-like in the fact that people sort of live or die for these bits of text.
Well, cult classic is in the dictionary, and the dictionary definition, according to the Oxford English Dictionaries, is something typically a film or book that is popular or fashionable among a particular group or section of society.
See, that's a very specific bit. It has to be a very certain group of people, because to say that something was just popular in general, like the way that Big Bang Theory is very popular, doesn't make it a cult classic, because everyone has an opinion on it, but the vast majority like it. And that's why it's popular culture, not cult classic.
Like, for the first few, maybe the first two seasons, it was considered a little bit of a cult.
I think
not a classic.
I think it became a popular culture quite quickly.
Yeah.
Because there's a very big difference between popular culture and cult followings, because the having a cult following, like you say, there is, it has to be niche, and I feel so awful saying that word. I hate saying that word, but it does have to be a very particular group of people. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be the same group of people for everything, but it's like sci-fi tends to get cult the name cult put on it a lot, because sci-fi naturally has such a very specific and dedicated audience. It's a very strange phenomenon when it comes to science fiction.
Yeah. Like, for example, I was trying to think of ways that I sort of went around watching things that were considered cult classics or cult movies, film, television. I kind of sat there and went, I'm not really into any of this. But then I thought about it. I saw your poster and I realised I had seen quite a few.
Yeah, that's the thing that confused me, was because I did look it up because I didn't want to get just films, because that's what I know.
Yeah.
I thought I'll get TV, and I tried a couple books. So you have like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, you have Catcher in the Rye, and all of those types of things.
Yeah.
And it's just basically anything that has an audience has the capacity to be cult.
Yeah. I want to get your opinion, because I want to get it out of the way now so that people don't go, okay, I knew you were going to bring this up. Professional wrestling.
I feel like,
because I'm a big professional wrestling fan, for people who are tuning in for the very first time. And I kind of feel like during the late 90s, which was considered a massive, the 80s was considered a massive boom for professional wrestling.
Yeah.
That's where it went mainstream. Everyone knows who Hulk Hogan is.
Yes.
Then in the late 90s, there was also this massive boom, mainly in North America, where people know the Steve Austins, The Rock, people like that. But then when I grew up watching it from 2003, it had dipped. It had become more of a niche market once again.
I don't know if things can ebb and flow out of that sort of cult mindset, but I think they can, because Doctor Who is both cult and popular culture. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But the cult following bit is talks more about the classic Doctor Who, classics with air quotes, being the early stuff. And then you have your newer Doctor Who, which is mass marketed.
Yes.
Purposefully. So that it can be sold in America and other countries all around the world, but mainly they're focusing on America.
And we will talk about Doctor Who in a little bit. I want to hold off on that because
I
really want to...
Our first ever show was about Doctor Who.
It was, and that's why I want to put a little bit of time later into talking about who we think the next Doctor may be, because that's the big news that has broken this week. Peter Capaldi is leaving Doctor Who, but we'll save that for a little bit later on in the show when a few more people are awake. And
well, we need something for the second hour.
Well... I want to throw it out there because to get one that I consider a cult classic that I watch, and it was one that I was watching the other night. I've started watching from the beginning again, and that is The Thick of It.
Okay.
I would consider it a cult classic for the simple reason being that it started on BBC Four.
Did it?
Yeah, it started on BBC Four to basically no viewers. For the, and it had three episodes for the first season, and barely anybody watched it. And then people got the videos, they got the DVDs, and it became so and it became quite popular, and people were talking about it. So then they made it a second series, then a third, and a fourth. By the fourth series, it was a full blown thing on the BBC One
and then
or
they
two
started
main
making,
channels.
Then they started making spin-offs.
Yeah, they've made Veep, which I believe is America. And they've made a few other things.
Because there's the one thing that confuses me about the spin-offs for The Thick of It is that there was the one where it was the same actor with the same characters, but he was a different character.
Yes, in the movie, they changed it up. The movie In the Loop, they changed it up because it was Peter Capaldi was still playing Malcolm Tucker. However, if people who don't know, The Thick of It is a political satire show based around British party politics and how it's run. It's amazing. It was suggested to me by a good friend of mine, Ant, and I've never looked back on watching it since because I absolutely love it.
It's one of those comedies that's linguistically comical.
For someone who had just come out of doing A-level politics and knowing about all this stuff, I was very, very much like, I was there like, oh my, I recognise this so much from some of the stuff I was reading.
It's the same because on a very similar sort of wavelength, there's 2012 and W1A. W1A. And it's a very similar thing where we watched an episode of it in one of my lectures. And then you get the teachers turning around and going sort of like, I've seen these situations happen in big production companies. Because it's the especially W1A is specifically looking at the same characters but put into work at the BBC. So you have all of these teachers going, I know people who have stories where this exact thing has happened to them at a similar, if not the same, company.
So what sticks out to you with cult classics? Which cult classics can you think of that started off being very cult-based with a small audience? Well, not a small audience, but a niche audience, and then became gigantic, big, and popularised?
Popular culture.
Popular culture.
It became pop culture. Doctor Who, like we mentioned earlier, is a big one because it is... It didn't have small audiences, but it did have very specific audiences when it was when it was in its sort of original incarnation. And I think things, especially with, this is the problem with cult, is that because of the way that we've changed as societies, is that it's easier to share things we like now. So if we wanted to show someone Pulp Fiction, that's very easy. You find it. You find your own copy of it, or you find it on DVD, or I would never condone this, but or you could download it. You don't even have to pay for it, which is bad because it puts malware on your computer and it's illegal and it takes money away from good, hardworking people. It's my rant over. And
wow, didn't expect that at 8:26 this morning, did you, Lincoln?
But basically, you can find things and share them a lot easier. If you want to share a good film that is cult with your friends, that's really easy to do. And it also means that the more people see, the more things get shared, the more things get parodied, the more things end up becoming popular culture, because popular culture gets big because people interact with each other. Whereas when you're looking back in sort of the 80s and 90s, sharing these things was a bit more difficult. You actually had to either give someone your copy of something, you had a hard copy, you had to give it to someone, or you had to trust them enough to give it back and let them borrow it. So, like, my mum and I do really similar things. We could live together for so long, and when one of them, like, they share it with the other one. Whereas now, if I find something I like on, say, Netflix, other companies available, I can tell someone about it on social media. I can tell Facebook, oh, I'm watching this. And anyone who trusts my opinion on TV or film will go, well, if she likes it, I'll try it. And then they'll do the same thing. And it's a sort of, it's one of these things where it's harder to be cult and
pop culture. That was going
to
be my next question. Do you feel that
separately? They kind of are coming interlinked because cult things become popular with these niche groups, but people are also slightly more open when it comes to things now because you don't have to dedicate time to do it. You can try it. If you don't like it, you turn it off. And then that's that.
When we... I totally see what you're saying there. When we come back from the next song, I've got a little bit of a rant about pop culture,
which
I think I'm going to do.
Not
pop culture. Sorry, not
man.
not about pop culture, about cult classics,
okay.
Actually. So it's going to be quite... I'm interested to hear your opinion, but if you want to get in touch and let us know any of your favourite cult classics or anything that that we've been talking about today, you can get in touch in the many different ways on Twitter, @SirenFM, on the email studio@sirenonline.co.uk, the Facebook fan page Squabble Box.
Or you can always text in on 077 97 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via our radio player app.
Maisie, what song are we going into next?
We are going into Regardless by Ty Gilmore.
Ty Gilmore sounds about right.
Ty Gilmore. Sorry. We'll be listening to that right after this.
This is Siren 107.3 FM.
You are listening to Siren FM. It is Sunday morning, and you are listening to Squabble Box with myself, Maisie Anderson, and Mr. Kai Valentine.
Hello. We are talking all about cult classics this morning, and you can get in touch, as we say. Let us know your favourite cult classics. We'll give you the number and everything else in just a little while. But before...
Before we went into that song, Kai promised us a rant.
Well, I don't know whether it's going to turn into a rant, but it might.
No,
do.
You promised a rant. You've got to deliver.
I'm giving pre-warning that this may sound like a rant. It may also sound very, very hypocritical of what we're going to be talking about over the next 87 minutes. So I am going to pre-warn you and say I'm probably going to contradict myself here.
I'm counting on it.
That happens every week anyway.
Mostly,
right.
Yeah.
My problem isn't with cult classics themselves.
Okay.
It's with people who are fans of cult classics.
In what sense?
I,
what do they do that annoys you so much?
The... How do I say this in a nice way? The culture of feeling like they're better than everyone else because they like a certain thing that nobody else likes that's not pop culture.
Are you talking about hipsters?
No.
You're talking about hipsters.
No, I'm just saying, and people who go, oh, you've got to watch this. If you're not watching this, then, I'm watching this. It's so good. You need to be watching this, else you're not in the sort of... you're not as popular as we are, but you're not as
nuanced.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar.
It does sound really familiar because
coming from you,
I know I've done it on many, many occasions.
To me, several times.
But so have you to me.
Yeah, but I've never said. A couple times.
Yeah, I think we're both guilty of it.
To be fair, when I say to you, you haven't lived until you've seen this, I'm mostly joking. I know that you will watch it in your own time and you'll like it or you won't like it. The thing is, it's hard for me to get annoyed by that because that's my, like, at the minute, that's what I'm doing. I'm being told, you have to watch this.
Maisie is a film and TV student here at the University.
I like that you're sort of turning as if someone's here to tell. But no, as a film and television student, I get told a lot, you have to watch this. Not just by my own tutors, but, like, I've had people telling me that I have to watch, oh, you'll love Orange is the New Black, you have to watch it, it's so funny. I'm now like, I can try it, but it doesn't mean I'm going to like it.
It was my main problem when, say, Breaking Bad first became very popular, for example, and a lot of people were saying, oh, you've got to watch this, you've got to watch Breaking Bad, how are you not watching Breaking Bad? And I go, because it doesn't interest me. I am fine with my romantic comedies and Adam Sandler films. Yes, they
you
may not be very
be.
Yeah, exactly. See what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying, Maisie?
Yes, but I'm joking, mostly.
But,
for the sake of this argument.
It's one of those things where I go, like, for example, Adam Sandler films, they're not everyone's cup of tea, but I find them nice and relaxing and easy watching, which is quite good after you've sat a full day, you know, analysing theatre productions. You go, well, I think actually just sitting down and watching some people call it trash TV as well, for example, like reality TV shows like Celebrity Big Brother, Love Island, ones like that. And we go, you got to just relax a little bit. But people who have, and this is coming from someone who, you know, is a co-host of a wrestling podcast, I know I'm very, very much guilty of this, but people who have opinions and like to tell everyone their opinions on things, it annoys me.
Yeah,
but it's very, very
you don't really have a leg to stand on, though.
And I don't think many people do in this argument, because I think everyone has that niche cult thing that they are interested in.
And this is the difficult thing, is that it's completely human nature to try and share these things. It's like what I was talking about earlier. If you can, if you like something, it's only natural that you're going to want the people that you like it too, which is why we try and share things, so we have that sort of extra bridge of conversation, which is why, like, whenever someone that I can trust with good recommendations, I will normally give it a go. However, I do have a similar thing where if people do sort of keep banging on about it, it gets harder and harder to want to watch it. My mum and dad do this a lot. They are super into their television, and when they have something they like, they will tell me. And then they'll tell me again. And then every time I'm on the phone with them, my mum will mention it. Or every time that I'm in the car with my dad, he will mention it, to the point where I don't think I will ever watch Man in the High Castle, because they won't stop. They just won't stop. It's the same with, what else was it? It was Orphan Black. They kept going on about Orphan Black. Then my sister watched it, and now she keeps going on about Orphan Black. It's like, I will watch Orphan Black in my own time, but right now I have to watch Footloose.
Yeah, my girlfriend is really wanting me to watch Whitechapel.
Yeah, which she does want everyone to watch Whitechapel.
And I know she's not listening, so, so I know I can say this. This is a great outlet for getting my problems out. No, she wants me
therapy hour.
She wants me to watch Whitechapel, and I go, it's not really my thing. I may watch it in my own time. I know that I respect your opinion, but it's not one thing. I would much rather just sit there and watch, you know, Love Actually instead, which kind of shows a little bit of a dynamic there in that relationship.
Yeah, but this is the sort of thing that, this is something I found out recently, and I don't know how true it is, but basically re-watching things that you know can be good for you.
Yeah.
Repeat watching can actually be good. It's this weird thing, and it's all about brain chemistry, where basically it can be really relaxing to watch something that you already know the outcome of. So if you're getting sort of a little bit anxious, if you're a little bit, if you have a sort of an unsettled mind, watching something where, say, for me, I watched Mean Girls. I've watched Mean Girls several times. I know how it ends. I know what happens from point A to point B. I know all the bits in between, which means there's no... I don't need to worry about being surprised by anything. And it can actually have a calming effect on someone's brain, because it's a matter of sort of everything's in order and it will never change. This is the... Unless you sort of have a different cut of the film, unless you're watching a director's cut instead of the original and all of that stuff, if it's the one that you know and love, that version, the fact that it's ordered, the fact that you know that after this bit's going to come up, or and you know exactly what the lines are, you know that no one's going to surprise you, nothing's going to jump out at you. So in that sense, it sort of helps rewire your brain back to the ordered position.
Yeah.
And I used to do this a lot. There's, for some reason, and I know this happened to your sister as well, where I had a Cinderella story featuring Hilary Duff. I watched that when I was 13. I watched that every day.
Yeah.
For the majority of like my preteen years. And I don't know why. I tried to watch it again recently and I can't. But I think the reason I did it was because it was a story I liked and I knew, and it sort of, it was exactly sort of that same thing. It was very calming to watch it.
Yeah.
But at the time I didn't realise it was simply because I know how it ends.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I don't know if I've explained that very well.
No, it does make sense, I think. And if it doesn't make sense, get in touch and let us know on Twitter, @SirenFM, on the email studio@sirenonline.co.uk, the Facebook fan page Squabblebox.
Or you can always text in on 077 97 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via the Radio Player app.
We're going to go into another song now. Come back before the news. And what song are we heading into next, Maisie?
We have had a song requested by Christopher Clarkson of Drive Time and The Morning Breakfast Show.
And Word Perfect. Get them all in.
He
gets annoyed when you don't mention all his shows. He got annoyed when another presenter forgot to mention that he did Drive Time. Which, Chris, you're on air too much. It's too much, buddy. Right.
Well, there's a whole slot on Thursday he's probably looking at now.
What song has he requested?
He has requested a classic, which is Come Fly With Me by Frank Sinatra. We'll be right back after this.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man day. You just say those words and we'll beat those birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly Pack up, let's fly away.
Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We are your interactive entertainment Sunday breakfast show, Squabble Box. We're going to be with you until 10 a.m. this morning. It's coming up to 9:15, and we hope that you've got a lovely Sunday ahead. So we've had a couple of emails in, Maisie. Shall we go into them now?
Yes, let's.
Okay then, so the first one, we've had a couple in, but I'm going to go to this one first, and this is from Chris once again, and he says, Back to the Future, a cult classic?
Now this is the thing, because I did a little bit of research prior to this, and Back to the Future was listed as a cult classic, and I think that's less so now, because the following is larger. Because it is part of popular culture, and this is the same argument we keep having over and over again today, is it's a bit like a Venn diagram of, if you had one circle which was cult, and another circle, which was pop culture. There's definitely a bridging.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that sort of the longer a text is out for, the more of an audience it's going to build over the years. Because the way that I found Back to the Future was because my mum and dad watched it when it first came out in the cinema. Then they had children and realised, oh, they're old enough to watch it. Let's watch Back to the Future and show our children this. So it becomes a generational thing, as well as a let's share it with friends thing.
It is really cool that it has crossed those generation boundaries as well, because and it was always going to, because of the fact that it was, you know, based in 2015. I think that really helps.
It gives you very unrealistic interpretations of what 2015 was going to be.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But that's fine.
We have talked about that on the show before. Yeah,
that was the first show on Siren we had.
Was it our very first show on Siren?
No, our very first show on Siren was it was like the week of Back to the Future.
Wow, we really, really like cult classics, don't we?
We really like cult classics. Everyone, not everyone likes cult classics. That's not good to say because that's not the point. But I think the audience doesn't necessarily have to be small.
Yes.
I think this is the thing that I keep sort of slipping up on, is the audience can be large and still come under the idea of a cult audience, because it's the whole sort of sharing stuff thing.
Yeah.
But it's also because the description for a cult following is basically just dedication.
Yeah.
Dedication to the text. And it doesn't necessarily have to, and this is the problem, is we keep using the word niche, and I think maybe that's where we're slipping up, because niche suggests small.
Yes.
So what we're really thinking of is very specific kind of dedicated person to a specific text, whereas just to sort of give it the barrier of niche does suggest that it's a very small audience who are dedicated to the text. It's like not necessarily. This is the problem with audience, and this is a problem that we come up with a lot in film and television studies, is basically it's really difficult talk about audiences, because people like EastEnders is a really interesting one. I would never say it's a cult classic, but EastEnders is made with the audience in mind of sort of a middle-aged woman who's probably has children, possibly works part-time if not full-time, and that's what the audience is, and a lot of people who watch it are that audience. But for some reason, and nobody really knows why, although people have studied it, the majority of the audience for EastEnders is you.
What do you mean by me?
Young men.
Yeah.
Young men who are reasonably well-educated watch EastEnders.
All right. That's fair enough. I've never really thought about that.
Yeah, because this is the thing. You can make something for a specific audience, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the audience that's going to be watching it. And it's really weird studying audiences, because you have to assume what people are thinking.
Yeah.
Because you have to assume that, oh, well, if this happens, then the audience know it's funny. So, like, well, not necessarily. So, like, some audience members might think it's actually quite sad. And that's the issue with trying to talk about audience, is the fact that you have to assume that you know the mindset of hundreds and millions of people.
Yeah, that is true. Chris has gone on to say that his niche cult classic is perhaps the programme's Police Interceptors and Can't Pay Will Take It Away.
Oh,
I love
Chris.
I love it that these kind of shows are kind of cult classics in a way, because they're mainly on channels like Channel 4 or Channel 5.
Yeah.
I believe both of these are on Channel 5.
I don't think they count as cult.
Well, they have a niche following.
Yes, but they don't have a niche following that is like super dedicated.
Yeah, that is true, actually.
It also, I think a large part of niche also has to do with the critics.
I don't know. I have Can't Pay Will Take It Away on Series Link.
I know you do, because I shared a Series Link.
I've run out of ones that I've...
Oh, no, yeah, have you run out?
I'm pretty sure I've seen every episode of Can't Pay Will Take It Away. The funny thing is, there are some, like, there are people like Justin in Ohio, our listener in America.
Mm.
You know, there are listeners that we do have in America that are sat here now listening to this going... What is Can't Pay Will Take
Can't
It Away?
Can't Pay Will Take It Away is the most evil program. And I'm not saying that because I think it's bad. I'm saying it because it's really heartbreaking most of the time. So for those who have never seen it, it is a television show about the High Court men and women who go and they take possessions away from people who haven't paid their debts.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's lawyers' fees, and some of the time it's people who are very well off and they just thought they could get away from the system. The majority of the time it's people who are really down on their luck. It's an awful lot of single parents. It's an awful lot of people large families living in really small flats that they can't afford, and it's sad and it breaks my heart, and I don't think you can call that relaxing television.
It's very sad moments, but it is I still find it entertaining because there are aspects of it which are quite sweet.
Yeah.
And you know, but I think it's an interesting one.
It's an interesting program, especially because sometimes it's very there's a lot of pattern to it.
Yeah.
Because you kind of know how the thing's going to... As soon as they get you, you know whether it's going to be a very dangerous situation or a really sad story. Like, you can tell by the way it's edited.
The narrator always says, they thought that this would be an easy operation.
Yeah, before the adverts, every time it's... You would never guess what they saw next. It's that sort of thing.
But it turned out that this would be their most difficult task yet. And they go, there's a more difficult task every single week.
Not even every single week. They show several different stories each week. They show about four.
Yeah.
And they're sort of linking between them.
Do you know what my favourite thing about Police Interceptors is?
Yeah.
Just watching it to try and recognise places in Lincoln.
Yes, because Police Interceptors does take place in Lincoln. I've always been really concerned that I'm going to see someone I know one day.
I sat there with my mum, and it went past Becky, our friend Becky's house.
Yeah.
And it just sort of went, and we were going past it going, oh, and I went, it's going down that road. And then, I was texting her going, that's your house. That's your house. And I was like, please don't go in there. It was really, really fun. But we are your interactive entertainment show, Squabblebox. We're going to be with you until 10 a.m. where Tracy Edgers will take over the reins. She's waiting in the wings. She's going to be here at 10 a.m. We've got plenty more cult classics to talk about as the show goes on. We're going to talk about the new Doctor and who we think may be the new Doctor in Doctor Who. It's coming up to the news at 9 o'clock. Stay tuned to Siren FM. Stay tuned to your Sunday breakfast team, Squabblebox. And this is a suggestion by Chris Clarkson. He's got in touch to say that his favourite cult classic is, of course, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And this is The Time Warp. Got to keep control. A bit of Craig David there for your Sunday breakfast show. We are Squabblebox. We're going to be with you for the next 55 minutes or so. We've had a tweet in from @TEdgers, Tracy Edgers, Sunday girl, who said that she's enjoying listening to... She's actually just been listening to Sunday Girl's Artist of the Week, Kate Dimbleby, talking on Radio 2 this morning. However, now she is back to listening to Squabblebox. So thank you, Tracy. She's going to be live here from 10 till 12 this morning. And yeah, her Artist of the Week, Kate Dimbleby, was talking on Radio 2 this morning. So cool. Make sure that you stay tuned for that one. We're talking all about cult classics here on Siren FM. And Maisie, shall we go into the Doctor Who debate now?
This is going to take up the majority of the hour, but okay.
Okay, so we'll call it our second Can You Believe That of the morning.
Okay.
Because it's Can You Believe That this week Peter Capaldi has basically resigned as Doctor Who, as the Doctor in Doctor Who. Sorry, I don't want people who really are really into Doctor Who coming at me for that.
It depends, though, because sometimes it's only since Eccleston that they've called it the Doctor.
Yeah.
Officially. Obviously, companions would still call him that before Eccleston. But in the credits, it was Doctor Who, whereas now it is the Doctor.
Yes. So we'll get into talking about now who is going to replace Peter Capaldi, because he's been around for 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a little bit of a 3-season rule, as I saw someone point out on Facebook this week. And I'm quite sad to see him go.
Yeah.
Because, one, I really, really enjoyed his Doctor. I'm not as down on... A lot of people have been down on the last couple of series of Doctor Who. I'm not as down on it as a lot of people. I think I enjoyed Peter Capaldi's first season. I thought it was clever. I don't think it was the best thing ever, but I did like how they were creating long story arcs again. The second season, I thought, was much better. But now there's a lot of talk that this third season is going to be his best season yet, people are saying, so let's hope that it is. But
it's a little bit fingers crossed at the minute.
Do you think that Peter Capaldi has been held back by bad script writing?
I think he's been held back by a bad showrunner.
Okay.
Now, this isn't an opinion I share on my own. I know a lot of people have this opinion, especially when it comes to Stephen Moffat.
Yes.
Who I'm sure is a lovely person, but there's clearly something about the way that he runs Doctor Who that's very different from Russell T. Davies, who did it before him. And I admit that that doesn't necessarily mean that I didn't like any of his stuff or that I hated every single episode that he was in charge of. That's not true at all. Some of my favourite episodes ever were written by him. I think the problem is that there's... And without actually being there and knowing the inner workings, you can't judge for certain. But there's definitely something about sort of Matt Smith's Doctor onwards that just felt like it was lacking.
Do you think that he made a better... do you think that he made a better writer than showrunner?
Definitely. That's because when you look back on sort of the Russell T. Davies era, a lot of the stuff that Stephen Moffat was writing have been are sort of classic episodes now. He wrote Don't Blink, which was the Weeping Angels.
Yes.
For the first time. He wrote the Library episodes, which introduced River Song. So he also has, he's very good at coming up with these monsters and these characters. There's a whole debate to be had about the representation of women in Doctor Who since Moffat's taken over, and that's a debate that I think is a little bit too much for a Monday morning or Sunday morning, so we won't go into that right now.
Yeah.
Just because that will take up the entire hour. But there are faults with the way, there are definite, very clear faults with what Moffat has done with the series.
What's your opinion on Chris Chibnall? Because he's taking over after the 10th season has aired. How do you feel that he's going to fit in? Because he is he's the showrunner of Broadchurch.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of people who've said that he has run that extremely well. It's been one of the biggest dramas of the last 10 years.
Well, the fact that they've managed to take Broadchurch, which should have really only worked as one season, and made it into 3 and then expanded it to America, it shouldn't be able to do that. It was a closed story arc that was in one season. It would seem really weird for the way that the writing works was very good as well, and it would seem weird to have it then come back with a, was it a similar storyline the second season? I think it was it, just the fact that it was the same two characters. Like, it's a lot of the time, stuff like that, you have to really extend your disbelief for that sort of thing to work, but it works really naturally.
Here's the big question. Who would you like to be the new Doctor?
Oh, this is the, there's so much up in the air at the minute because, obviously, because it's only just been announced, there's a mix between the genuine sort of people that are going, like, there's the sort of genuine applicants, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
Because obviously with when it comes to Doctor Who, you don't really apply, they come to you. But then again, then you have a mix of the genuine sort of these are the people they're considering, and then you have everyone throwing up ideas and they kind of get mixed into the void. So at the minute, there's like 20 names of different people who could potentially be. I've seen Eddie Redmayne on the list of, for some people, and I think these are more fans who want to do it, who want their favourite actor to do it. Or actress, because this is an interesting thing, is that this poll of people is probably the most diverse the Doctor Who poll has ever been. When Eccleston was going to take... Not Eccleston, sorry. When Capaldi was about to take over, pretty much everyone in the lineup was a white man.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you're getting different nationalities, you're getting... some people are suggesting American doctors, some people are suggesting more women, more people from lots of different backgrounds, different ages. It's finally someone who can put on literally any mask can put on any mask.
Give me
it's
a name,
great.
Maisie. Give me a name. You've sort of backed away from it for so long. I want a name.
Okay, the one that I saw that I really like the sound of but don't think will ever happen.
Okay.
Rupert Grint.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't expect that from you, even though I know you're a massive Harry Potter fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the books. I'm not so much a fan of the films anymore.
I've heard a few things that people have thrown to me, which I go, oh, I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah.
One would be, I want to get it out there first of all, a returning face.
Yeah, you were talking to me about this, and I don't think they're going to do it.
I don't think they have the capacity to,
but I don't think they are.
A Matt Smith or a David Tennant, I would be interested to see, even if it only lasted for another one or two seasons. The other ones that I want to throw out there is the one that's been making the rounds over the last couple of hours, really, over the last sort of 24 hours, is Chris Marshall, because he has quit Death in Paradise, which films at the same time as Doctor Who. So there are a lot of people online going, oh, wow, this might be Chris Marshall. And I'd just love to see it, just to have Robert Lindsay walk in the background and have a cameo somewhere.
Yeah. See, I love Death in Paradise. I was quite upset when I found out he was leaving, because I'm two seasons behind. Hmm. Because I watched it on Netflix. Other stream sites are available. But this one has Death in Paradise. But they only have up to season 4. And it's on season 6 now. And I don't know how to get hold of it so that I can catch up.
Yeah. The other name that I've heard someone mention as well was Hugh Laurie.
Oh, no.
Would you not be interested?
I think he would do a great job, but I just don't think he would do it.
I wouldn't want Hugh Laurie straight after Peter Capaldi. I think they've got to mix it up a little bit, because I think they're very similar in what they would bring to the role personality-wise.
Yeah. One that I like the idea of, and I'm not 100% sure on whether it'll ever happen, is Richard Ayoade.
Oh!
Yeah, this is the thing. I like the idea. I love the idea of Richard Ayoade. However, he is not an actor. He is a comedian.
Yeah.
He has had acting roles, but they are comic acting roles. And I don't think he would trust himself to do such a big task.
It is such a big, big role. And we're interested to know who you think will be the next Doctor. You can get in touch and let us know. Going back to your prediction of Rupert Grint.
Mm. No, it's not my prediction.
Well, no,
it's my
desire. The one that you would like. The Doctor did mention when he regenerated...
Into Tennant.
From Tennant to Matt Smith, he mentioned... I'm still not... Well, he...
Yeah, the first time he mentioned it was Eccleston to Tennant. The first question he asked Rose was, am I Ginger? I've always wanted to be Ginger.
And then he did it once again with Matt Smith, who went, still not Ginger. So that's what the Doctor wants. Maybe it will be Rupert Grint. But you can get in touch and let us know at SarenFM on Twitter, studio@sarenonline.co.uk on the email, the Facebook fan page Squabblebox.
Or you can always text in on 07797 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via the Radio Player app.
You're listening to Siren FM.
You're listening to Squawbox with Kai and Maisie, the best place in the world for squabbling and boxing.
Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We are your interactive entertainment breakfast show, Squabblebox. We're going to be with you until 10 a.m. and we're talking all about cult classics this morning. Let's dive into a few, Maisie, because we've sort of been talking about cult classics as a genre and then a lot about Doctor Who. Let's jump into a few. Let's go to the poster. Because Maisie creates great posters for our show.
I was very proud of this one.
You were. So let's have a look at some of them. So I'm going to see which ones I recognise.
I think some of them you'll be able to name because I used the titles.
Yes.
Just
well,
to
I'll tell you whether I
clear.
Know what they are. So I recognise the TARDIS. If anyone wants to play along, go to www.facebook.com. I forgot the name. Facebook.com/squabblebox on Siren. So I see Maisie, a TARDIS, which is Doctor Who.
Yes.
I see Fear and Loathing, which I have heard of.
Okay.
But I don't know much about. Pulp Fiction, I've never seen.
But you know.
But I know. Donnie Darko, don't have a clue.
Have you never heard of Donnie Darko?
No. What is Donnie Darko?
Donnie Darko is the weirdest film ever. It's kind of a, I don't want to spoil it, so I won't tell you much, but it's basically a sort of psychedelic thriller. It's a little bit horror and it will really mess with your head. So it's the sort of thing to watch like in the dark with blankets and a friend. You don't want to watch it on your own.
Oh.
Not for the first time. Once you've watched it once, you can watch it several times perfectly fine. And it's a little bit of a mind twist, but it's fun. It's a fun mind twist.
Well, that's put me off that one. So, no. I may check it out at some point.
I don't know if you'd like... I think you'd have to be in the right mood to watch it. It's not something you can just pick up.
What is Monkey Island?
Monkey Island is the best game series that has ever been created. It's a LucasArts...
Those are the opinions of Miss Maisie Anderson. The best game series that's ever been created. And you want to work for the BBC, Maisie.
No, it's my personal favourite. It's the first game I ever remember playing. Was the Return to Monkey Island, which was the fourth one. They've made five. It's LucasArts, the same people who make Star Wars, or did make Star Wars, before they sold it to Disney.
Right.
And because Disney now owns the rights to Monkey Island, I really want them to make a movie. I don't think they ever will. But it's a great story. It's basically a point-and-click adventure game. You know what that is.
Yes.
So it's an adventure game where basically you play as Guybrush Threepwood, who is a young man who wants to be a pirate. So he goes to a pirate town and tries to... And you have to go through these trials to become a pirate. They have this... thing called insult sword fighting, which is the idea that you're sword fighting, but it's really what you're saying to some, it's really the sort of the insults you're throwing
that
get you the points. And it's just this really fun adventure. He becomes a pirate by the end of the first one, spoilers. But that's sort of
no!
the goal. It's a really interesting because there's a love story going throughout. There's sort of this weird evil. Are people who you can trust still trustworthy? It does an awful lot of fan service. So like older games still have characters from the start games, and it's really it's been going on for a while to the point where the first two are kind of the cult ones.
Yeah,
those are the ones that everyone loves. The three that came after that, a lot of people are iffy on. Because the style changed, because people really didn't like the fourth one, even though that one's my nostalgic favourite. And the main reason they didn't like it is because that was when they went into 3D. And you know how, like, in the 90s, there was that phase of 3D that just wasn't good?
Yeah.
It was like the teething of 3D. A lot of people don't like that one, mostly because of the story, and because the controls were really clunky. But I really loved it. Because that's the one I remember playing, and I played that one first, not realizing that it wasn't the first one. So yeah. I played this game, and they were talking about some characters come back that are difficult to recognize because they were pixels and now they're 3D. And they were talking about this all this stuff that happened to them, which they were basically telling you what happened in the first game. And I thought, wow, this game has a huge backstory. They've really gone into, like, the writers have really gone into detail about, like, what this guy was doing before he decided to become a pirate.
Yeah.
Not realising that there are three more games before that that are supposed to explain it. But yes, that's what Monkey Island is.
Ah, right.
So it's just a video. I should have just said video game, sorry.
It's just a video game. 15 minutes later. It's that's what I like about this show. I get to learn things about the things. Because I think that's the cool dynamic that we have, is that we do have very, even though we're good friends, we do have very different tastes in what we like to watch.
Well, if you do want to play Monkey Island, if anyone listening at home wants to try Monkey Island, if you're into point-and-click adventure games, you can get they've re-digitalized the first two. So they've made them HD, they've changed the graphics, so it's all a lot clearer. And they've added voice acting, because the first two didn't have the voice actors. And you can get them quite cheap on Steam, I think.
Ah, right.
Other gaming downloadable things are available.
Well, we're going to talk more about cult classics as the show goes on. There's a few more on the poster that I want to get into, because mm-hmm. I don't recognise all of them.
I'm guessing the gaming ones are the ones you probably don't recognise.
Probably. I guess I don't know why I'm not into gaming as much as I, you know, because I like my... I've always been very mainstream when it comes to games. I'm not one of these that will have these games that are cult games. I guess I had... The only cult games that I can think of are, like, maybe Crash Bandicoot, when I used to play that.
Yeah, and Spyro.
Spyro, yeah. But since I've grown up, I've moved away from the cult games. As I got to my teenage years, I sort of turned to the FIFAs and the WWE games.
See, the problem is, Crash Bandicoot and... the one that you play is Crash Bash, isn't it? That one and the Spyros, they are also those awkward 3D teething stages.
Yeah.
I think our generation will have very fond memories of those stages.
One of my favourite games as a kid, and I don't know whether you ever had it, you might not have, was for PlayStation 1, and it was the Action Man game.
Do you
remember this?
I had a bunch of the Barbie games.
I had...
because we are very solid in our gender stereotypes.
Yes. I had the Action Man PlayStation 1 game, and I used to love that game. I don't know what made me think of it. But...
I had the Barbie wedding game, where basically I was the wedding planner for Barbie and her prince.
Oh, that's...
You got to design the invitations and the cake and her dress and play a mini game to get the invitations to all the woodland creatures.
I love it when we get into these nostalgic moments right here on Sunday Breakfast Squabble Box. You can get in touch in the many different ways. Let us know your favourite cult classics, whether it's a book, a game, a film, a TV show, anything. at SirenFM on Twitter, studio@sirenonline.co.uk on the email, the Facebook fan page Squabblebox.
Or you can always text in on 07797 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via the Radio Player app.
Maisie, what song are we going into next?
We are going into...
That came out very like this.
Speaking of nostalgia... We are going into I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys. We'll be right back after this.
Oh, Backstreet Boys!
Yeah. You are my fire, the one desire, believe when I say I want it that way. But we are two worlds apart, can't reach to your heart when you say that I.
You are listening to Siren FM, and it is Squabble Box on Sunday breakfast at 9:30. We have had a message in from Christopher Clarkson.
Chris has been getting in touch a lot this morning.
Yeah, it's almost as if he's in the next room. And he's asked us a little bit more about Doctor Who, so we'll go into it without going into it.
Yes.
But he's asked, how about Idris Elba. I always say his name wrong, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Even though he's probably very busy.
Yeah, that's the one thing about Idris Elba, is that he is very, very busy. He's, as you were saying in the last song, he is lined up as the bookies odds favourite to be the next James Bond.
But he also asked, if you could have a choice of a female doctor, which actress would it be? And would you give them a female companion or totally role swap and make a male as companion?
I saw Dame Judi Dench talking about this, and she made a comment saying that she just wants it to be, she'd love it for it to be a female doctor and a female companion leading a big BBC show.
See, this is the problem, and it comes back to this idea of audience that we were talking about earlier, is basically the people who make these shows seem to be under some impression that a man won't watch two females and a woman won't watch two males.
It's
this weird assumption that you have to see something so completely recognisable that it's the only way that you will watch it, even though there's plenty of science fiction that has very few females in that women still watch, and there are an awful lot of other things that have like huge women. I think it's Rogue One, for example, has a female lead. That didn't stop men going to watch it. It's such a horrible way of thinking, and I don't know why it's assumed this. I don't know whether it has any ground for this. But one of the...
Like, we haven't seen the statistics.
Exactly.
So we don't know.
The most annoying thing is the assumption that you have to have a pretty girl, otherwise the dads won't watch. So
yeah.
The dads were watching it when they were kids. That's why they watch it now. My dad didn't tune in every week for Catherine Gillan's legs, like everyone seems to think. My dad watched it because he watched it as a kid, and he showed it to me and my sister when we were children. And it's also really annoying to assume that, but not assume that the women will only watch if it's like if they had like a sexy male companion. Even though there was that small group of people who didn't like Capaldi just because he was old and not a sort of pretty young man anymore. But it's irritating. So irritating.
Have you heard who David Tennant has backed for who should be the next Doctor.
Is it one of his kids?
No.
Because otherwise that'll just get messy.
Because that is, yeah, that's already the biggest Doctor Who family ever.
Yeah.
But no, he's actually backed Olivia Colman to be the next Doctor. He thinks that she would make an amazing Doctor.
Hmm.
What's your thoughts on that?
It's interesting.
I mean, she's been in everything recently.
She has been in everything. Like, the problem is, I can't put a face to her name right now.
No, she's at Broadchurch.
Oh, yes,
she was in Broadchurch, Last Tango in Halifax.
Yes, I know her now.
Yeah. To be honest, right, I don't think I've watched a drama over the past 2.5 years that didn't include either Olivia Colman or Sarah Lancashire.
She has been in Doctor Who as a monster, if I'm thinking of the right woman.
No.
But the Broadchurch woman.
Yeah, she's not been in Doctor Who.
What, David Tennant's co-star?
Yes.
Yes, she has been in Doctor Who.
Matt Smith's first episode
she was in. She was one of the shapeshifters.
Oh.
She was the one with the two girls.
I hadn't read that. I didn't know that. Ah.
How can you not remember?
Yeah, I can't.
It's
been a long time, to be fair, since I've watched that episode.
It was the Prisoner Zero episode with the alien who was taking the form of the unconscious patients in this very large hospital that's in a very small town.
Of course.
So if that's the case, because the whole thing that they're playing with at the minute is sort of you can have the same face again, and the face kind of represents something.
Mm.
Like with Peter Capaldi and the face that he takes, it's kind of that. It's kind of reminiscent of the choices he had to make when it came to like Pompeii.
Yeah.
Whereas if he took a face of a monster, then that's kind of worrying.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's all up in the air right now. We're not really sure. We have no idea who the next Doctor is going to be. I wouldn't be able to put money on it right now.
No, I don't think anyone would.
Tracy Edge's Sunday Girl has got in touch and said, at Squabblebox, I'll be the new Doctor and you two can be my companions, keeping me out of trouble. Hashtag watch out, Daleks.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I like that dynamic of having three people in the TARDIS. I liked having Amy and Rory and Matt Smith.
I was very much, like, a lot of people didn't like it. I loved it in the first season of Peter Capaldi, just when he had all the kids in with him.
No, that annoyed me, though.
I know, it really annoyed
you. It irritated me that he suddenly became Dr. Daycare.
Yeah. The final thing I want to say on this is, if it's Chris Marshall, I just want to see the moment where the first scene of the new season, if Chris Marshall came in, say, after the regeneration, is just they pan out to see Chris Marshall stood there with an electrician guy fixing the phone in the TARDIS and him going, yeah, I'm just getting switched over to BT.
No.
I really, really want to see that moment.
Can't do that. I mean, he could make an awful lot of My Family jokes.
He could.
I don't think anyone from my family's been in Doctor Who.
We need to move away from Doctor Who. Sorry, people.
That is the final word of
Doctor Who. So we'll go to another song. We'll come back and we'll finish off talking about cult classics. Stay tuned to Siren FM.
Siren 107.3 FM wants to hear from you. Just head to sirenonline.co.uk to find out how you can get involved and be part of Lincoln's first community radio station.
Yes, that is Rod Stewart. Not Rob Stewart, as maybe was stepping into the system with Hot Legs. If you want to hear more Rod Stewart, you can tune in to Legends on Siren FM with myself, Kai Valentine. Tomorrow night, here on Siren FM, we're going to be paying tribute to Rob Stewart. said it again. No.
Rod.
Oh, Rod Stewart's career. Tonight, tomorrow night, 10 p.m. here on Siren FM.
And next week, Rob Stewart, his lesser-known brother.
Yeah, that's who I've got playing. That's what the artist is that I've got in, Rob Stewart. No, it's not. You'll find out more tomorrow night. But we are your interactive entertainment Sunday breakfast show, Squabble Box, and we're going to be with you for the next 18 minutes or so before we hand the reins over to Tracy Edgers and Sunday Girl. The quirky questions are coming up just after 10 o'clock. So we're talking about cult classics this morning, and let's talk about a couple of books, Maisie.
Okay.
One of the cult classic books that I read a lot when I was a teenager, and now it's become a bit more pop culture because they made a film series out of it, was the Hunger Games series.
Yeah.
Now, I was very much into this as, you know, this was, I really, really enjoyed this.
You just really loved seeing a dystopian world through the eyes of a 17-year-old girl.
Yeah, and it probably wasn't aimed at my...
Yeah, it was at my demographic. I don't think it was aimed at boys, but that doesn't necessarily mean that... It's the same argument we were having earlier. Just because it's a female lead with an awful lot of other females in the story doesn't necessarily mean that men won't read it.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, it's got to be really weird reading the feelings of a young girl about two boys that she can't pick between.
But I really enjoyed it as a teenager. I wanted to go back and read them again.
Yeah, it must seem really sort of surreal to think, oh, this is how ladies think about men.
Yeah.
Because I've had it with, like, I read Adrian Mole, which is a similar idea. It's like his diary, basically, of a 13-year-old boy, and he writes, and in the story, even though it was written by a woman, it is written as if it's a teenage boy. So when he talks about his girlfriend, that's really weird for me, because it's like, oh, it's strange because I'm reading from his perspective, I'm reading what his feelings towards this girl is, as if he's a boy, and I'm empathizing.
But when it's written well...
Oh, no, it's written very well. Sue Townsend is an amazing writer.
You buy into the character, which makes you buy into the story, yeah, which makes you buy into the whole arc of the book.
Yeah, I do wonder if Adrian Mole counts as a cult classic.
I'm not sure.
I think I would consider it pretty classic, but I don't know if it would be cult. I don't know how big the audience is for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is an interesting one. Other cult classic books, Maisie, that you've read. Have you ever read 1984?
I want to.
George Orwell.
Apparently they've run out of copies on Amazon.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It completely sold out this year.
Why?
Political reasons.
Political reasons, which we're not going to go into on the Sunday Breakfast Show. No, I can see actually why. Mm. Now you've said it, I go, oh, yeah. But I have got a copy of it.
Yes, that's your girlfriend's copy, isn't it?
Yeah, I started to read it, and it's a very, very good and well-written book, but it's very, very deep and hard, and it's
not an easy book to read.
It's a difficult book to read, and I did struggle with it, I'm not going to lie. I got about a chapter or two in, and I was there like, oh, This is hard work to read, you know. It's not a casual readings kind of book. Don't take it on holiday with you and lay in the sun and read it.
Unless you're super into sort of dystopian Big Brother type worlds.
Oh yeah, yeah. But you know, it started to drag down my holiday, so I opened up an autobiography of Anton Deck instead.
So you did take it on holiday with you?
Yes.
That might have been your big problem.
Yeah.
I have to admit, we were talking about Death in Paradise earlier. You bought me for Christmas a book about Death in Paradise.
I did.
It was great. I haven't finished it yet.
That's good.
But I took it on... It's about the murder that happens in it is a sort of like meditation guru in his like hotel spa lodge, which I was reading while I was in a hotel spa.
Ah.
So it was kind of submersive in a creepy way.
Yeah.
So, stopped reading that quite quickly. To be fair, I didn't really have time because I was on holiday.
So other cult classics, Maisie, books, films, TV shows, what else haven't we mentioned today?
I don't know if Can bands bands can have a cult following?
Yeah.
But I don't think they would be considered cult in themselves.
Like, we played Busted earlier on in the show. I would class them as a sort of cult band.
But I think it's difficult with music because, by definition, every successful artist has a cult following. That's the whole point of music.
Yeah.
Is if you like a band, and if you're really into music, you're going to follow that band, whether it's, like, physically taking from tour to tour, because a lot of people do that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. I know my dad once told me that, you know, he had people who would follow him round when he was doing gigs,
yeah,
like 80s, 90s.
And that's on a smaller scale.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, people will do it with huge bands. Like, there are people who will go to every single concert of, like, Metallica that they can, or Queen, and it seems crazy, but it's because of the idea that, well, each time is different. Like, it's never the same show twice, man. It's like, well, kind of.
Yeah.
It's the same songs. It's just that so they might be a bit more tired the second time around.
No, because you do get that with live music, you get a different feel for it. They sing things completely differently. You never sing the same song twice the same way.
Oh, it's just like that proverb of you never step in the same river twice.
Well, no, it's like when you go and see, it amazes me when people go and see live acts and they go, they didn't sound like they sounded on my CD. And
well,
I go,
of course they didn't.
Yeah, because one, they're singing live.
That's like
live.
Complaining that a Victoria's Secret model doesn't look quite as good when she's not on the magazine.
Yeah, but
it's like they're touch-ups.
You say, but not even that. You can sing completely you sing a different way every time. I find,
like,
it,
if you're wanting an exact replica, then you go see cover bands.
Yeah,
they're the ones who have studied the single so hard that they can do it note for note exactly as it is.
For example, like when I watch Ed Sheeran and James Arthur are two that really stand out for me, this where that you'll watch them do live versions of their, like, Ed Sheeran did a live version of Castle on the Hill on the Graham Norton show a couple of weeks ago, and he basically said the reason why he wanted to do it was actually because it was in second in the charts and his other one, Shape of You, was first, but actually Castle on the Hill is his favourite song he's ever written, so he wanted that to be first. In the best way ever. I know this is going off topic, but he turned around and he went, Graham Norton went, so you've got a new single out? He went, Castle on the Hill? He went, yeah, it's a song about Suffolk. Which is the most amazing response ever.
That isn't how he said it, though.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he went, yeah, it's a song about Suffolk.
Yeah, but he didn't do it with the accent.
What accent?
You're putting on a silly voice.
Am I?
Yeah.
You're
taking the
accent.
Mick out of Suffolk.
No, I wouldn't do. I would not do that, Maisie.
Yeah, but no, me and you quite like Castle on the Hill because there's a Castle Hill in Huddersfield.
Yes. I was having this conversation with one of our colleagues down here at Siren FM, actually, who used to live in Huddersfield. But the point I'm making is that he was on there and he made he did a different version of it.
Yeah.
And it's not completely different, but there were little bits where I went, oh, that's different. And it's because of that live aspect of everything.
I think if you see a band live and they sound exactly the same as they do on the track, it's because they're lip-syncing.
Yeah, that's true, actually. So we've been talking all about cult classics this morning. Other cult classic bands.
Well, this is the thing. I think every band is technically cult classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it depends what you count as cult classic. Because a lot of people count, and we've discovered this today in more depth, is that some people count cult classics as being this niche product. But actually, you can have your mainstream things, like your Doctor Who. Like, for example, I'm sure Arctic Monkeys was considered at one point a cult classic niche product, and then they've become...
Yeah, there's a definite Venn diagram of things, and I'm starting to wish I hadn't suggested doing this now, because it's so difficult.
It is a really difficult one, but I think it's been a really entertaining show. I've enjoyed it. We hope that you have all enjoyed it. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us throughout the week, you can tweet at SirenFM or at Squabblebox on Twitter. You can also get in touch with us on our personal email, which is squabblebox@sirenonline.co.uk. And make sure you let us know what you think of the show. If you've enjoyed this and this is your first time listening, please do check out our other episodes. We've got 100 and... No, not 100. No, I'm thinking of another show. We're on episode 87 I believe, this week.
Maybe
88.
We're nearly at our centennial.
Yeah, we are going to get to 100 episodes.
Before we move.
In May, we will get to 100 episodes, so it's not far off. And if you want to check out any of those past shows, you can do on the Trending Topics Network on iTunes, or you can tweet us, Facebook messages, and we'll point you in the right direction for those as well. Have you enjoyed today's show, Maisie?
I've loved today's show. I always love being on Squabblebox.
So we'll be back here for Squabblebox next Sunday, 8 till 10 a.m. You can find us tomorrow morning on the breakfast show for Mondays and Fridays, 7 till 9 a.m. right here on Siren FM, as well as myself on Legends on Siren FM tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Wow, that's going to be a long day. But from myself and Maisie, we wish you a happy Sunday. There's lots of great programming coming up today with Sunday Girl 10 till 12. Then we've got Ed Wellman with Siren Replay from 12 till 2. Take the Stage from 2 till 3. And then we've got Sorry for the Inconvenience, 5 till 7. That's great comedy, guys. The Comedy Society from Lincoln are here for that. Much more to come throughout your day, so stay tuned to us and stay tuned to Siren FM.